is 91.7 WVXU Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik, filling in for Mark Haney. Today, our monthly chat is about gardening and your lawn, yard, and trees. We'll talk today about what to do with the fruits of your garden labor. Joining me are Campbell County Extension Office horticulture agents Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm chef and culinary manager Stephanie Michalak, Boone County horticulture agent for family and consumer science Diane Mason, and Boone County Cooperative Extension horticulture extension agent David Kester. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. You can email your questions to talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And even though I'm filling in for Mark, I know that this program always gets a lot of calls. So if you really have a question you want to get in, I say call early, call often. Well, call early anyway. 513-419-7100. Well, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
So what should people be doing in their gardens right now? Of course, you're harvesting, but should you be planting anything right now?
Maybe? Absolutely. It's time for the fall garden, and there's just an awful lot of things that can go in right now. Cabbage, cauliflower, broccoli, all those things. I suppose you should be seeding lettuce, radishes, beets. Just no end. And I love gardening at this time of year. It's a little bit easier to do it when it's not 95 degrees. And I just find that spending time in the garden now, even if you're not planting as much, you're starting to clean up a little bit, which will make getting next year's garden started much easier.
Cleaning up what?
Oh, anything that's you're taking off, putting things into the compost bin that need to be come out of the garden, such as old tomato plants, things like that. You're weeding, you're throwing.
Aren't
some
your
of that.
Tomato plants still?
They should be, but some of them have gotten some diseases pretty early this year, and some of them may not be producing as much, and you may want to be getting rid of some of those. Anything that's finished, squash plants, for instance, those would probably, unless you planted another secondary crop later on, the first planting would be pretty much done by now, and anything like that. And so composting now, getting that in there, and then really, if you're not going to seed anything or you're not going to plant a fall garden, cover cropping is a great idea, and we'd love to see more people doing that. You know, we've been to conferences now, the organic conferences, and they just tell you never leave your soil uncovered,
What's a cover crop?
A cover crop is something like winter wheat, ryegrass. You can also put a legume in there, something that'll fix nitrogen. All that really protects your soil, and it'll add organic matter when you turn it into the spring. And it looks better in the fall. It looks better all winter long. They will grow during the cool season of the year and really worth having.
Sarah?
Yeah, so outside of the vegetable garden, think about coming up here shortly, September, October, even into November, think about lawn care renovation, seeding, fertilizing some of your ornamental plants, your woody ornamental plants, your trees, planting trees. So needing help with that. Also a good task to do this fall is getting your soil sample collected, submit to the extension office. That way you get the reports, you get the recommendations in time for you for spring. And if you need to add any, for the organic matter or nutrients, you can go ahead and do that now. Let it sit over the winter, biodegrade, release those nutrients, and then when you go in and plant in the spring, then they're ready to be available for the roots to take up. So many things to do. And another thing I really like to do in the off season is sharpen tools, clean tools, organize, label.
Organize, really?
I know. Sometimes I don't always practice what I preach, I have to admit. But it's always really nice because, when you're pruning, you always want to make sure you get clean cuts, sharp cuts. You never want to tear any of your plant material. And with fighting any diseases, some may, overwinter, they could get on your pruning shears, and then you can inoculate another part or a different plant. So, it's always good. Your lawnmower, you want to make sure you keep up with the maintenance on that, sharpen blades, clean, change your oil, take out the gas, things like that.
You talk about cleaning those tools so they don't spread one disease to mm-hmm. another plant. Do you have to clean them in something special or just hot soapy water?
That could, but a really diluted bleach solution. Lysol spray is always good, but always when you use bleach solution, you then want to follow up with some just soap and water just to get that out so it doesn't, you know, corrode. Also, you want to make sure that you oil up the gears. You can use WD-40, any other type of lubricant, always real nice. So then in the spring when you're, you know, you got the summer, you know, the winter blues, you're ready to go. They're all nice, sharp, ready to go.
So let's talk about what we're harvesting at this time of year. Diane and Stephanie, what should people be doing with all those tomatoes and zucchini?
Well, there's plenty of things you can do right now with all the tomatoes, zucchini. You can obviously make sauces and can them for later. You could even freeze them. Same with a lot of herbs that are going on right now. If you end up with a ton of thyme and you don't...
T-H-Y-M-E.
We don't have enough T-I-M-E. That's definitely for sure. But you can, you know, you can dry it. You can dehydrate them. You can also keep them in your freezer. So there's so many different ways in which that you can preserve not just, you know, tomatoes, but plenty of other crops that are happening right now.
You talk about drying them, and I know some people have a dryer, but if you don't, is there a way to do it in the oven or something?
Yeah, absolutely.
How
so
do you do that?
If you have just a standard conventional oven, what you can do is either turn it on and then leave it cracked open a little bit, so you put it at its lowest setting. Some newer ovens will have a dehydration button or setting. It's usually around 180 degrees Fahrenheit. And that's a really great mechanism that you can use and just put it on a sheet tray or something like that so that it's not falling into your oven. Otherwise, yeah, just crack it open, keep it at 350 for a little bit, and then turn it off so that you're not actually cooking your product.
And then do you just keep it in a jar? Do you freeze it once it's dried? What do you do with it?
So you can do either, to be honest. You can either put it, you know, in a glass jar. You could put it in a plastic container and then just keep it in your in a dry, cool space. So cabinets are great spaces for that, especially if you don't, you know, have a basement. But otherwise, freezing is great.
And you can you freeze it without drying it?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And then what happens to it? Doesn't it get mushy?
It doesn't. Well, some it depends on what product we're talking about here. So if you're...
Mushy is an official word, by the way.
I mean, it is. Why not? So you don't necessarily want to freeze onions, per se, because those will get mushy very quickly. Same thing with tomatoes, unless you make a sauce out of it or a jam, and then you're freezing that product. So if you're looking at a raw product, any heartier produce or herbs can totally be frozen fresh. But otherwise, it does tend to mess with the texture. So...
Most frozen products will get mushier, but you typically will use those in a casserole or a soup or something like that.
So they're still adding the same flavor.
Correct.
Do they lose their flavor at all in the freezer, or do they stay?
Only if you leave it in there a very long time.
So it'll last for a couple of months?
A couple months, 6 months, up to a year, usually, depending on how well you pack it.
What about garlic?
Garlic tends to get stronger when it's frozen, stronger in flavor. And usually you can
which
just
can
leave
be good or bad, I suppose.
It depends.
You can,
on
it will
the,
last.
The person.
Just sitting out, it'll last.
As long as it's been harvested at the right time and taken care of. Don't leave it out on the counter in the sun. Sometimes it will start to sprout after a while, but
yeah, either leaving it in the sun or sometimes if you leave it next to other produce that's still releasing ethylene, it'll start actually growing again. But usually if you leave it in a cool, dry space with other alliums, so...
Paper bag or
paper
not?
Bag, you can, but the air is fine for it. I mean, it's a natural product. It's
does
ready
okay
to go at dry. Yeah.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. Margie's calling in. Hi, Margie. What's your question? Margie?
Yes.
Yes, what's your question?
Honey, I am wanting to pickle some things. And one of the things that I love to have is roasted red peppers, but I don't know how to go about that and how to jar them.
Any ideas on that?
So from the cooking standpoint, when you're roasting red peppers, you can either do that on the grill, just put a little bit of oil on top of it, and then put them inside on top of the grill and char them that way, and then peel off the skin so that you just have the fleshy part that hasn't been burnt.
Now, when you do that, do you take the seeds and everything out first? Or do you leave
What I do personally, you can theoretically break it down so that you're not cooking the seeds and the internal part of it. But the easiest way that I find is just putting a little bit of oil on the whole product. Obviously, wash it first, and then just throw it on the grill or even in the oven at a really high temperature, so 375, 400, you can go up if you want. And basically all you're doing is blistering that skin off, so you get that nice succulent roasted red pepper flavor that we all know and love. And from there, basically all you're doing is taking off that charred skin. So basically that those blackened pieces that you would find in normally like a jarred red pepper container, that's what you want to take
off.
And
how do you preserve that?
So you can preserve it either in oil or you could do a vinegar solution.
The other thing I wanted to ask about was actually pickling, like carrots and cucumbers and onions, and making the vegetable mix.
Right.
How do you do that, Diane?
Yes, we always recommend that you find a research-based recipe. You can go to the Center for Home Food Preservation to look up a recipe for a pickled product to get the right proportion of vinegar, sugar, and those types of things. And then it will also tell you how much of the raw produce you need for that product. You can boil water bath pickled products. We typically don't recommend using oil in those because it can affect the sealing of the jar.
Does that answer your questions, Margie?
Yes. One last thing, though. The tomatoes, my mom used to make those, and she would actually cook them on top of the stove, peel them, then cook them, and then jar them through the process that you go through. Is that a good sterile way to do that if you cook them first? I'm always afraid to put things in raw and think that I'll get bacteria in them.
Cooking tomatoes before you can them is a good idea. You will get more in the jar because you're cooking the product down a little bit. You're also helping to start to kill off some of the bacteria.
Thanks so much for your call, Margie. We appreciate it. If you have a question, 513-419-7100. You also can email your questions to talk@wvxu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter as well. You were talking about the whole idea of pickling and canning. My mom used to sort of blanch a tomato and freeze it. And then we'd use it in soups. Do you recommend that now, or is that sort of an old-fashioned, don't do that anymore?
No, it's totally fine. Yeah.
You don't even have to blanch them.
Really?
You can just cut them up and put them in the freezer.
And do you need to get the seeds and things out? Or?
You don't have to. You don't have to peel them. You don't have to get the seeds out. But you can peel them if you want to.
What's the benefit?
The benefit is you don't end up with peels in your product.
Easy enough.
Yes. But if you have a large tomato and you freeze it either half or whole, that whole skin will peel off when you cook it anyway. So you don't have to, you can pull the skins out.
So say you're throwing that in a soup or a broth and
the skin will come off in a big piece and you just pull it out.
So I have a question for our cooking experts. So some tomatoes sometimes aren't as, aesthetically pleasing. They might have a bruise in them or a crack, things like that. So if I want to freeze it, I don't want to throw it away. Of course, I might make a tomato sandwich with that. But would that still be usable if I freeze it whole, or should I get rid of some of those cracking things like that? Or what do you recommend about that?
I normally take off those cracking portions beforehand just because it'll be easier with the frozen product later on. But it's sort of your prerogative.
You're also getting rid of any bacteria that might be in the crack.
Perfect. So. All right. I like it because this is the time of year, we're dwindling down on our early tomatoes, a few here or there. And then we did plant at the Extension office in Campbell County about six late tomato crops. So they're just now setting fruit and they're looking good. In fact, they don't have disease on them because they weren't planted early on. So I'm excited. Thanks.
We're going to continue our discussion about gardening and food preservation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Today, we're answering your gardening questions and discussing how to prepare and preserve what you grew this summer so you can enjoy it this winter. My guests are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agents Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Chef and Culinary Manager Stephanie Michalak, Boone County Horticulture Agent for Family and Consumer Science Diane Mason, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Email us, talk@wvxu.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. And Diane had a very important point she wanted to bring up about tomato canning.
When we're canning tomatoes, we need to be sure to add lemon juice or some type of acid to the tomatoes. Years ago, most tomatoes were acidic, so we didn't have to worry about that. anymore, we have so many varieties of tomatoes and we have no idea what the acidity is. So the only way to make them safe is to add bottled lemon juice.
But it's bottled. You don't need to use fresh?
No fresh.
No fresh.
We don't know what the acidity of fresh lemon juice is. So bottled lemon juice has a consistent acidity.
So you're safe. Okay, good. Zita is calling in now. Zita, what's your question?
Hi. I have some concerns about both canning and drying vegetables that have either vitamin B or vitamin C content that, you know, that you would want to preserve. And I'm concerned that the drying process, you would lose all your water-soluble vitamins. And in the canning process, we used to have tinted glass for canning jars, but now they're just clear glass. And I know that light can destroy water-soluble vitamins. And I just wanted your advice about either drying or canning under those circumstances.
Do you lose a lot of vitamins in the process? Stumped a guest.
you're going to lose some vitamins. Whether drying or canning would lose more, that I would have to do a lot of research on that to look that up. Water-soluble vitamins definitely will be harmed in the canning process. Vitamin C is not heat stable, so you're going to lose some of that. In terms of storage, if you store it in a basement or in a dark cupboard, then you would not have it exposed to light all of the time. So I wouldn't worry so much about the clear jars as I would about the actual process used. They do say if you do tomatoes, you can either boil water bath those or pressure can those. And they do say that if you pressure can tomatoes, that you get a little bit better nutrition profile from pressure canned as opposed to boiling water bath.
Zita, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. David, it's been a cooler August than we've seen in a long time, I think. So does that affect the growing season? Is that a good thing, a bad thing?
It's good for me.
I like it too.
No, it's been a great August, I think. And it's really, the days are getting shorter, so that's really slowing down our growth more so than anything. But, there's still so much growing season left to take advantage of, but definitely we're starting to see that. And so you've got to, if you are going to start a fall garden, you really want to get those things in the ground and get them started growing early. And I always like to use maybe a liquid fertilizer to get them off to a good start. I want to make sure they never go through any drought, so I'm going to be watering, September and October are historically our driest months. So you want to make sure that you can irrigate these things during that time.
How much water do they need?
1 inch per week. And best way to do that is with a rain gauge. And, make sure that, and even if you're irrigating and it's overhead, you can collect an inch of water in a can and you've applied an inch of the water to your garden.
One of the things we've been talking about, all the foods canning and freezing and all the different things. And as soon as you say canning, I get scared, or pressure cooker. I do a lot of freezing. I make freezer jams. I'm happy to freeze almost anything. And I know what to do so it doesn't come out totally freezer burned, unless, as Diane said, you just leave it in too long. But canning starts to become a little bit scary. Do you have any advice for people for canning so they don't end up contaminating the product or having a pressure cooker blow up?
The biggest piece of advice that I have is to know your pressure canner. You cannot can in a pressure cooker, but you need to use a pressure canner, and then you need to follow the instructions that come with it. Second is, if you have one, practice with just water so that you're not ruining any product and you're getting used to the noises and the sounds that the canner might make. And then third is to get a high-quality recipe and follow the recipe. Not everything on the internet is true. And we get a lot of calls of people saying, I found this recipe, or I talked to my sister or my brother or my mother, and this is how they used to do it. In about 1994, a lot of the research on home canning changed. A lot of the recipes changed and recommendations changed because we got a lot smarter.
So if you've got an old recipe, get rid of it.
Yes.
So don't do what grandma did.
Don't do what grandma did.
Or at least vet it. Find out if it still holds validity or not, because it potentially could still be safe.
What are some of the things that have changed specifically?
I think the biggest change I know of is green beans. grandma used to put green beans in a boiling water bath or an open canner. They used to call it open kettle, and process them for a significant number of hours. And now all vegetables need to be done in a pressure canner, because we're not killing the bacteria in the middle of the jars. Mm-hmm. And I've had many, many calls this year of people who did it incorrectly, and then the jars spoiled, and they've had to throw the product away.
How can you tell if it's spoiled?
Look.
You can just tell. Look, smell. There are a lot of different indicators. If it doesn't seem right.
So if you have a doubt, don't eat it.
Yeah, exactly. When in doubt, throw it out.
You can kill people with improperly canned foods.
Well, there you go.
And you hate to bring that up.
You know, it's a terrifying thing, but it is a reality.
But if you do it right and you follow the directions and you follow the processes, you shouldn't have any problems.
I think I'm going to freeze things. I'm safe.
You know what might also help is canning with somebody who normally cans or regularly does it and feels much more confident. Having somebody else there to help you through the process, especially the first few times that you're actually doing it, is a great help.
There still are some fruits available now. Peaches are out right now, of course. And, you know, you can make peach jam, and I often make the freezer jam. But I remember my mom, before we knew all about freezer jam, would make the kind with the wax on the top and all of that. Freezer jam tastes just as good to me. Is there any benefit to one or the other?
Theoretically, canning can last longer than in the freezer, and also the fact that, you know, sometimes electricity happens and your freezer goes down, and then theoretically you're also throwing out product that you wouldn't necessarily have to if you were canning it. And that's really the only big difference, but modern technology is great and freezers are awesome. So
freezer jam tends to take a little less time.
That's my benefit.
And
I like
a little less equipment.
I also, in the house I grew up in, we had a big fruit bin, we called it, and it was, you could put everything in there, shelves and canning and all of that. Where should people store those things now? I'm guessing most houses don't have those anymore. That was under our old porch. It was cold in there. Is the cupboard okay?
Cupboard is okay. If you can, you know, section off an area, which would be the pantry, and have a lower temperature, that'd be awesome. It's just not necessarily in everybody's budget or space.
Garage? Is the garage a good place?
Garage is
cooler?
Can be. Depends on what else you have in the garage. I mean, obviously, you don't want to store canned products near, you know, gasoline or other harmful substances. So it really just depends on how you're organizing the rest of your home.
You also kind of want some sort of temperature regulation. Out in the garage, it may get incredibly hot. It may get incredibly cold, depending on what your garage looks like. So if you can come to a basement that might be more consistent in temperature, that might be a little bit cooler, you're probably a little better off.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, Rick's calling. Hi, Rick. What's your question?
Hi, I have a question, a few questions. One about storing potatoes. If you live on the country like I do and do not have a root cellar or a heated garage, how to store them? And separately, if you want to save seeds and you have some hybrids, how long before you lose the hybrid vigor? How many generations? Thank you.
David, do you want to start with the seed question?
Yeah, you won't lose the hybrid vigor from one, but hybrids are, of course, a cross between two inbred lines, and you have to you'll save that seed, but every year you'll have to redo that. And but for storing the seed, if you put them in a jar in your refrigerator or freezer for an extent, they should be good for a number of years. But I don't losing the hybrid vigor. I'm not really sure. You know, hybrids have to be bred almost on a yearly basis to maintain that.
Okay. And as far as the potato question goes, normally just a dry, dark space totally works. So it doesn't have to be, you know, dedicated cool area. But as long as there's not a lot of light in the area and it's dry and temperature semi-regulated, you're good to go.
And generally in a single layer, and then take a look at them. And if you see one starting to go bad, get it out of there because one bad potato.
It's sort of like the one bad apple thing, huh?
Yeah.
What if the potatoes are turning green? Do you not eat those? Don't eat those? Cut off the green?
Usually means it's been exposed to light, either sunlight or even artificial light can do it. Like at a grocery store, you may see green tomatoes or potatoes because they've been sitting under light too long. It is poisonous. You can either cut it off or discard it.
What about when they start to grow eyes? I always just break off the eyes and keep going. Is that fine?
You're fine on that.
It's fine, yeah.
Doesn't hurt anything.
And speaking of potatoes, it's awesome to plant them and so much fun working them in the garden. We're about to harvest some sweet potatoes that some kids came out to the garden and planted. So September-ish is usually the time to harvest your sweet potatoes, and it's like digging. And it's like the best gift ever because they just keep coming and keep coming. And
how do you know, though? They're under the ground. How do you know when it's time to go digging for them?
Good question. So the foliage on top, you know, it starts to discolor a little bit. And then you'll start seeing them. So we have ours in raised beds. And when you plant them conventionally in your native soil, you hill them. So they'll eventually start raising up a little bit closer to the soil surface. And when you start seeing a little bit of that, of course, you don't want it to be exposed too much to the sunlight. Always pull one out and look, you know, and see.
How do you know if it's ready?
Well, a few things. A wonderful publication that UK puts out. There's a calendar guide that showcases you when to plant and how many days to harvest. So that's a great guide if you're, you know, if you're not sure. And then also when you're out there, horticulture is a science and it's experiments and, you know, all about the weather and when you plant. So you kind of get an eye for it, no pun intended, of when, sorry, I had to throw that out there.
That was awesome.
So when you're harvesting, you just kind of, you see it, and you start harvesting. David?
Well, sweet potatoes are in no way related to Irish potatoes. And
right.
Sweet potatoes take a really long, warm growing season. And so you really want to leave those in as long as they're, you know, they continue to grow and to size up. And so I usually let the vines get hit by a light frost, and then I'll go ahead and take them, because after that, they're not going to get any bigger. But until then, I'll leave them, unless I'll sneak and look under there, and I find that they're big enough, then I'll go ahead and take them. But
all of them, or can you take a couple then go get more later?
You don't want to leave them in the sweet potatoes. Again, they're a warm season crop, and they don't want to be cold. And you want that vine to get hit by a light frost, but you don't want to leave it in there continuous. Now, your Irish potatoes, you can leave those in the ground for an extended period of time. They won't be hurt by the cold.
Mm-hmm. Again, our number is 513-419-7100. If you have a question or a comment, you can also email talk@wvxu.org like Randy did. And he wants to know what herbs can be brought in and grown through the winter and which ones come back each year outside, like chives and perhaps mint.
Well, pretty much any herb that I've had experience with, I lift them up from the garden and I transplant them in. You may get a little transplant shock. Before bringing them, actually, I kind of deadhead them off. Make sure, for example, like basil, they don't have any flowers. They may discolor a little bit. And always you want filtered light. So you never want to put them in the dark. They still need some light. They're probably not going to produce as well. I also make sure I put a little liquid fertilizer on them just so they get a little, you know, they need that little extra nutrients in the throughout the winter. So some things, like some of our rosemaries, there's different varieties out there that are winter hardy. Most of our, I guess, thinner leaved herbs like our basils, Thai basils, they all need to be taken out. Those are only considered annuals. So mint, of course, that's a perennial.
I almost wish it wouldn't overwinter.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Oregano.
Yeah.
And Marianne, you know, we're seeing now with you know, warmer winters, some things are overwintering now that did not, that we never got to overwinter before.
What does overwinter mean?
Well, it means that they will actually go dormant during the winter and they'll come back and be ready to grow in the spring. And we're seeing that with landscape plants as well. You know, I remember a day when we never could grow southern magnolia here or crepe myrtle. And there's some gorgeous crepe myrtles and southern magnolias now just out in the landscape. So, you know, we're starting to see this, I guess I'm going to call climate change, is having an effect that way.
And also, sorry, Mary.
So, Sarah, you mentioned the whole idea of making sure they get light.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the day where you could just turn on the lights if it wasn't sunny outside and just stick them under a light. But with all the fluorescent lights and the changes now, do those still work?
I mean, if you have them, we use grow labs in schools and, you know, we use them. It's not natural light. So, you know, if you have that, I would avoid any type of, you know, heated air. If, you know, making sure that, you know, if you have a radiator or something that traditionally is underneath a windowsill, try not to put it there because any forced air will brown them. I was also thinking, too, if you want to try and experiment, we all have these little microclimates out in our yards, and especially if you have a bricked house or a bricked garage or other building, that may hold in some heat. And so you may need, you could just mulch it with some leaves or, you know, some straw throughout the winter and see if it comes back. And as David mentioned, you know, we're getting warmer winters. And so we have seen things come back, no problem at all. And actually snow, if we get snow, which I'm hoping we do, that actually insulates our plants. So when we get that, don't think you have to hurry up and go outside and, you know, lift up your plants. In fact, it's protecting it. Now, ice is another story, but snow, we're good to go.
All right. Again, our phone number is 513-419-7100. Hi, Jimmy. What's your question? Jimmy?
Hello?
Yes, what's
Hello.
Your question?
Oh, yeah, I'm calling on behalf of all of the vegetables in the vegetable kingdom. not just rhubarb, but asparagus, and trees, bushes, apples, everything. You know, you keep talking about pruning and picking and eating these things, but I'm talking about the plants. Plant lives matter, and this insanity just has to stop. Plant lives matter. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay. Comments?
Yeah. They need to be used.
All right.
It's respecting the, you know, the relationship we have with vegetables. Mm-hmm. So,
what about, actually, we're going to take a short break here. We are running out of time. We're going to continue our gardening and lawn discussion in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is 91.7 WVXU's Cincinnati Edition. I'm Marianne Zalesnik filling in for Mark Haney. We're talking gardening and what to do with the fruits and vegetables of your labor. My guests today are Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Chef and Culinary Manager Stephanie Michalak, Boone County Horticulture Agent for Family and Consumer Science Diane Mason, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100. Email talk at WVXU.org. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Let's talk pumpkin. Now, there was this little contest going on. David, you got some seeds, and everybody here was planting the seeds.
Yes.
I know some people have great leaves and no pumpkins. We at our house got nothing. I think nothing came up, or if it did, we thought it was a weed and took it out. I'm not sure. What should pumpkins be doing and looking like right now?
They ought to be starting to color a good bit. You're starting to go from the green to the orange.
Oh, there should be a fruit there already?
I'm hoping so. Yeah.
No, Pete says no fruit there. I got no fruit.
Boy, no. By now, you definitely, if you've only got flowers now, you're, I don't know. It's you ought to have some fruit on it by now.
Pete, our producer, says that you gave us bad seeds.
No.
You could win the contest.
Just so you know, Peter Huttinger is having great success and has shown us pictures of his. Mine were attacked by deer.
Rabbits.
And,
oh, my gosh.
But I replanted them. But I'm hoping with the longer summer-like, spring-like winters that mine are flowering. So I'm very determined that I will.
Maybe by Thanksgiving, not Halloween.
Yeah. There weren't any rules for this contest. So
all I know is I got dragged into this, and I dragged my husband into it, who did the planting, and he says there's just nothing in the ground.
I think your problem, Marianne, is no sunlight.
Well, that's true. You've seen our yard. Yes. It's not, although we did some work in the back. Anyway, all right. So pumpkins, if you did plant them, you should be starting to see
some colorish
the plant
in the fruit. And if you've just got flowers now, you're going to have a small pumpkin, and it'll probably be green. And if you do have, you know, yellow or orange pumpkins right now, it's best just to leave them where they are unless your vines are completely dead as well. And then I would probably think about going ahead and never pull the stem, never, you know, carry it by the stem, always cut the stem with the sharp pruners and pick up the pumpkin at the base. The you know, everybody thinks that stem on a pumpkin is a handle. It's not. It's not intended to support the weight of that pumpkin. So you've got to put both hands underneath it and carry it that way. And if you lose the stem, that pumpkin will rot that much quicker. So you want to keep the stem on it.
And there's certainly, if it's not growing by now, it's too late to plant.
I'm always optimistic, but I think you're in trouble.
Yeah, we know pumpkins at our house.
Well, when
this
I
year.
Get a pumpkin, I also planted gourds, so I have a new, interest in gourds. So I'll let you all know when I have gourds and pumpkins for maybe even the holiday season through Christmas.
See, there you go.
You never
that
know.
Could be a good thing.
It could be 80 degrees. We don't know.
Our phone number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question about pumpkins or anything else. I want to talk about grass because earlier in the year, people in the spring plant their grass and they're working on it. And, of course, they've been mowing and it's been a fairly cool August, so the grass didn't die like mm-hmm. some years or, go dormant. But what if, for example, asking for a friend, if there's a part of your backyard where the grass has been sort of trampled down a little bit, can you plant now?
Yes. This is really the optimum time. Right now is the time to get your grass seed down. And, the complaint I got from people all summer long was it never went dormant. I had to cut grass the entire summer because we had an abundance of rainfall. And so it really has been a great year for growing turf. And you did have to keep cutting it. And by all means, continue to cut it. Do not let your grass go in the winter or in the fall long. Keep it cut short. And
how short?
Same 2.5 inches, something like that is what you want it. And that last cutting, I have cut grass in January before just because it needed it one more time. So don't put your lawnmower away. Continue to use it. And as Sarah said earlier, now is a great time to reseed. If you have a hard rake, work that soil up a little bit. You don't have to take out the existing grass, but just make sure when you put seed down, it gets in honest-to-goodness contact with soil and not sitting on top of dead grass or thatch, because that's not going to work. And then, of course, the other thing is once the seed is in place, this is where we break all the rules on irrigation, and now it becomes more important to water frequently and not as heavy. You have to keep that seed constantly moist. Usually we're always saying water infrequently, but water a lot at the time. This is the opposite for turf or starting new turf grass.
So how much do you want to put, how much water at a time?
Well, you're going to have to, I have sometimes during the fall of the year when I've got the little seedlings starting to merge, I've watered twice in a day because the sun's out and it's hot. And so
just
I've
evaporates.
Had to do that. But you want to keep that soil constantly moist.
And ideally, you would want to have a first mow before we go into winter. So that's always very important as well.
So you want it to grow enough so you have a chance to mow it.
Absolutely. And you want, and you may find different areas of your yard depending upon light, for example, that it may come up in an uneven amount. So you want to have a consistency tallness. So once that happens, then you want to mow it your first time. And then when you have that after your mow, then you can fertilize if you want, because the fall is the best time to fertilize. You don't want to do it in the spring because then we have all those spring annual weeds that are going to be coming up too. So we do have a wonderful publication through the University of Kentucky that talks all about that as well.
Marion, you should have that friend of yours who has the lawn problem call us.
I'll work on that. 513-419-7100 is our phone number. Hi, Melissa. So you have some pumpkin questions.
Yes, I do. I'm not going to win any contest with my pumpkin plants either. No fruit. I had great, healthy, lush-looking leaves and lots of flowers. It's trailing well from where my children planted it. But starting at the base, the leaves are dying. They're turning white. And it's like a powdery kind of white, and they're slowly it's progressing down the vine.
Yeah, that's,
because they're such great growers.
I see some knowing nods here.
You described it perfectly. That's mildew, and it's a fungal disease, and the longer the older vegetation on your plant is going to pick that up, much quicker than the newer succulent vegetation, and it will just devastate that plant. And there are fungicides that you can use. One of the things that is so true about pumpkins, and I always preach rotation, 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 but if there's one crop that I would rotate, it would certainly be pumpkins and your squash and any of those members of the same family, because they all those diseases overwinter in that same spot. And when you put a new one in there, those diseases are just ready to take over.
This is the first time we've we planted pumpkins there, but I noticed we planted a pumpkin plant there and some zucchini, and they are both not doing well. I have no fruit on either. I think I'm the only person in Cincinnati that can't grow zucchini.
Melissa, good luck next year. How about that? Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate it. She mentioned zucchini. What do you do if you do have an abundance of zucchini? I mean, zucchini bread, zucchini and just in the microwave and for dinner for a vegetable. But what do you guys suggest for zucchini?
Oh, there's so many different things you do with zucchini. Right now is a great time to grill while it's still warm outside. So grilled zucchini is great either by itself in a salad. Or
how do you do it?
So basically what I do is, you know, wash it. Cut it the way that you like. Normally, with a on a grill, you want to cut them in larger pieces than just a bite size.
Like long or round? Or
you can do either, really.
Either one. Okay.
Yeah, strips are great, especially if you're trying to go for an aesthetic like that, and you can do little twirls with them, and it's really pretty. But you can also do half moons. You could, you know, just cut them in sections. It's really up to you and how you like eating it. And obviously, you can cut it afterwards as well. But you just want to keep the sizes relatively large so that when you put it on the grill, they don't fall through the grate, and then you curse yourself for not actually getting to eat any of the zucchini. Grilling is a great time right now. Otherwise, stuffing zucchini is fantastic.
Really? What do you stuff them with?
So what I usually do is bulgur with like some tomato sauce, because tomato sauce, you can make a lot of it right now as well. So it's using a lot of fresh produce right now. Otherwise, stuffing it the same way you would eggplant, because a lot of people have stuffed eggplant recipes. Same thing. Zucchini's also great as like an eggplant parm, but as a zucchini parm, awesome idea. So,
Diane, any other zucchini ideas?
One of my favorite ways is ratatouille. And right now we have eggplant, tomatoes, peppers, zucchini.
Use it up.
I usually throw mushrooms in with mine, cook it down, eat it fresh, put it with pasta, put it with rice. Great way to use it. And then I can also freeze any leftovers and pull that out and use that later.
And I have to tell you, I have the very best recipe ever for chocolate chip zucchini bread.
So. When we lived in a neighborhood, we would bag it and then go out at night and put it on people's doorsteps. You really have got to keep that plant. Pick the zucchini as often as it's there, and it will continue to produce.
It's the gift that keeps on giving.
Lots of people make these zucchini noodles now. You can do that with any kind of summer squash. You can do that with a lot of different vegetables. But
the spiralizing.
Spiralize to make it as pasta.
And then how do you cook that?
So you can either saute it or you can blanch it in water really quick. So just get boiling water and dunk it for 1 to 2 minutes. It cooks very quickly.
Now, I ran into a problem when I was making some zucchini bread. My cousin had grown a bunch of zucchini, and she had this enormous zucchini. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was 2 feet long and, I don't know, very round.
Yeah.
Right. And what I didn't do was realize that those seeds were going to be a problem. And I made this zucchini bread that my daughter loves, my famous chocolate chip zucchini bread recipe, and she wouldn't eat it because, I mean, these seeds were – so what do you do? Do you just, like, scoop those out?
You can scoop them out. When you go to cut it, basically cutting around that area, or if you're shredding it, basically once you start getting to the seeds, don't keep shredding it on that side. Just turn it and work on the other side.
And you could
cut it in half to start with, scoop it out with the spoon, and then shred or slice, do whatever. But you can still eat large zucchini. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not bad. It's just got large seeds.
Right. Yeah. Well, the seeds kind of made it unpleasant.
And they're tough. Yeah. They can be very tough.
They can also be a little bitter.
Not the best bread that I've ever made. And also, sometimes I will shred the zucchini and throw it in the freezer just in the amounts I need to make bread. Any suggestions on that? That seems to work. No issues.
If it works,
can do that.
Go for it. Yeah.
We have a question now from Monica. Hi, Monica. What's your question?
Hello. Every year I grow storage onions. I start them from seed. And this year I waited till the tops turned brown and fell over. Then I picked them and put them on a picnic table in the sun to dry. And almost every one of them is starting to rot where the stem, you know, goes into the neck of the onion. And they're not going to store. And I don't know. What happened? Why did that happen? I did what I always do.
You know, it could be the year, the fact that they may have been wet when you harvested them, and even though you had them in full sun, it's usually recommended you put them in on a picnic table like that in filtered sunlight. But I don't think that's not why, unless they got sun scalded at the top and then began to deteriorate that way. But this year is probably a little bit different because we have had so much moisture that maybe they just didn't store for that reason.
Good luck, Monica. Yeah, Diane?
You can take those onions, peel those onions, and chop them up and put them in the freezer. You don't have to blanch onions. So you can save did harvest as long as you have freezer space.
And if you freeze them, you said they might get a little bit mushy.
You're going to put them in soups and stews and those types of things. You can't put it
on them. You won't put them on a burger.
Yeah. What you could also do is, chop them up and caramelize them and basically make caramelized onions and then freeze that.
Those will freeze as well.
Yeah, those will freeze, and those are great on burgers.
And usually you let that entire top, you don't cut it until it's completely dry, and then you can cut it about an inch or two above the onion itself. You want to let that go ahead and dry naturally in the sunlight.
Good luck, Monica. At least you'll have onions in the freezer. Thank you so much for your call. Our number is 513-419-7100 if you have a question or a comment. What else should people be starting to think about at this time of year? Winter's coming. We're not there yet. But is there anything people should be doing to start to get ready for that? Is this a good time to prune trees?
No, you really want to wait until February, March on something like that. One of the things that I dislike about this time of year is that all of my wife's wonderful houseplants have had their summer vacation and they have to come back inside. And that is not a favorite time of year for me. But really, you do need to start looking at them. They're okay for maybe another several weeks outside, but you want to check them for insects. You want to check them for, maybe it's a it's really not a good time to repot them, but you want to check for that. And it's time, unfortunately, to start moving them back towards their indoor environment.
We just got an email from Sarah who said she had a great apple crop from her tree this year. Is there anything she can do to ensure that she has a great crop again next year?
Well, no. What apples will sometimes go through biennial bearing, where they'll bear very heavy one year and they'll take the next year off. What you want to make sure is that if it did bear very heavy this year, you're probably going to get less fruit next year. The goal is to keep an even amount of fruit on them every year. So if you have a really, really big crop on you, I have people call me, Marianne, they'll say, I had to prop my limbs up with boards, and that's not healthy for the tree. You've got to thin that tree, and you thin it when the fruit is about the size of a dime way back in April and early May, and you take about, if there's five apples in a cluster, you need to remove three of the smallest ones.
Really?
And leave two in that cluster.
And you shouldn't feel bad that you're...
No, because you'll get much better quality fruit and much larger fruit. If you leave all those on there, it's bad for the tree, and you will be really disappointed in the fruit that you get.
Quick call from Amy. Hi, Amy. What's your question?
Hi. I have some gorgeous Nikko blue hydrangea bushes on the side of my house that I planted about 10, 12 years ago. And I was getting these amazing blooms on them every year. And then I'm assuming it's just because we've had this climate change and these late frosts the past 3 years or so, but I'm getting like maybe one or two blooms instead of the like 50 or 60 on each bush I'm used to. Any tips to make sure I have those gorgeous blooms next year?
Well, they are susceptible to leaf spot as well. So with a lot of times you'll see some discoloration or maroon look to the foliage. So that can, year after year, that can decrease the bloom. Also the pH. So if you're not, stabilizing that low pH, they like that low acidic. So you might need to acidify the soil. And lastly, pruning. If you're not pruning at the correct time, you might be pruning the buds off. So a lot of times, UK has wonderful publications on when to prune depending upon the species. So some you prune right after it flowers, some you prune multiple times a year, some like the oak leaf hydrangea, it doesn't matter, for example. So it's always good to know when to prune. Foliar fungi can really, over time, that can decrease the size and the overall amount of blooms.
All right, Amy, thanks so much for your call. We appreciate it. And I know you aren't going to believe it, but we are out of time. It goes so quickly. Thank you all for being here today.
Thanks.
It's been a pleasure. We've been talking about gardening and preserving food. My guests were Campbell County Extension Office Horticulture Agent Sarah Stoles, Turner Farm Chef and Culinary Manager Stephanie Michalak, Boone County Horticulture Agent for Family and Consumer Science Diane Mason, and Boone County Cooperative Extension Horticulture Extension Agent David Kester.